Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
So I'm recharged and reignited after my week off last week, and big thanks to Mandy for standing in for me. And so it's nice to be back in a beautiful morning here in D2, and to introduce you to our business panel, who are in the shape of Louisa Meehan, who's of Woodview HRM, and also by Bob Hoffman of Vista Executive Search. You're both very welcome to the show.
Morning, Bobby.
And we might start with not a front page story, but a story that certainly caught my eye, written by Matt Cooper in the Irish Mail, Bob. Oh, the innocence of thinking we'd have a new national maternity hospital by now.
Well, it seems our country is now in the business of building 2 billion euro hospitals. This is just the children's hospital rehashed again. So in 2013, the Minister James Riley said we needed a replacement for Hollis Street. I don't know how many hundreds of years old Hollis Street is. And myself and Louisa were just talking about our babies that were born in that hospital. It's been due for renewal for decades and decades. They're now saying it'll be lucky if it'll be ready by 2030. We Irish are a wonderful nation, but we did invent procrastination and we've bloody perfected it with this thing.
So I think this is one of the key points here, Bob. So we're talking the year 2013. We're talking a budget for a new hospital of 150 million. They're the two figures or numbers that I want you to remember as you bring us through this story.
And that figure has now climbed to, guess what, 2 billion. The children's hospital went to 2.4, and as we all know, it's still not open. And the maternity hospital has gone from that number up to 2 billion. And this is one that can't be blamed on the planning system. The planning permission has already been granted for that. So this is just another example of how, as a country, we do some things great, but infrastructure, we just don't seem to know how to do it.
Louisa, as somebody who has had the experience of Hollow Street, you say your family were all born there.
Yeah.
What do you make of the story?
Well, you know, personally, I think that we need a new National Maternity Hospital. I was just saying when I had my first son in 2010, so before 2013, on the way to theatre in the middle of the night in an emergency situation in labour, the lift broke and I had to relocate myself out of the lift and calm the midwife down because she was panicking. However, like the staff, the medical staff that are there are phenomenal, and what they do with a building that is over 100 years old in 2013 in terms of its use is amazing. But what we have now is a situation where we're trying to build another hospital on a brownfield site. So they want to build it alongside St. Vincent's, which makes sense. Again, back in 2010, I had a situation, spent time in Hollis Street, and I had to go to Vincent's as well. So I understand medically the need of having the two sites cohabited. But we need to start. We need to build it. The article, Mark, talks in detail about the fact that the private sector seems to be able to build hospitals very quickly, with the Bon Secours private hospital in Limerick being almost ready just 2 years after construction began. So there is something wrong with the public sector hospitals, which granted they're bigger perhaps and more complex, but if they're not being built within a relatively similar time frame. And there is an element here talking about the National Children's Hospital toward the end. And I have to admit now, I'm going to read out what it says because it confused me. And if a listener out there understands this, I would be delighted to hear the answer. They're saying that there is now a concern that the planning permission may be required to convert the hospital in Crumlin into a hospital.
Okay.
So I'm not sure I understand that.
Well, I think what it means...
Something's gone wrong.
Well, I think what it means is that if the site was to go up, say, build up on the footplate, that it would need planning.
Okay.
In other words, it's still a hospital, but they may choose to put on extra floors or whatever it
and
might
then
be.
They need, okay, fair enough.
I assume that's it on the basis.
Another confusing item that's said here is that one of the reasons that the cost has gone up is that the development of the hospital on an existing hospital campus, i.e. St. Vincent's, rather than a greenfield site, has increased the costs. I mean, that doesn't make sense.
No,
it doesn't make sense.
A whole lot of this doesn't make sense. I don't know. Maybe some of the mathematicians out there will tell us. But if you go from 150 million to 2 billion in a period of 12 years, I don't know what the compound inflation percentage is there, but it's pretty significant.
Yeah. It's a bit like a game of Monopoly here, isn't it? It's Monopoly money and they're just moving it around.
Okay, enough of that. Let's move on to America, where I've just come back from. And I can tell you it's an interesting place at the moment. But there's an interesting piece in the Irish Daily Mail today why even Trump's own supporters are growing queasy that he's shamelessly using his presidency to make him and his family yet more billions. Now, this is, again, almost bordering on the bizarre, Bob.
Well, I think the underlying article here is about that the word governance has been airbrushed out of US public life. There is no governance left with Donald Trump. So basically 220 very wealthy people who all forked out between $55,000 for Trump's Bitcoin, effectively, a cryptocurrency.
It's a Trump with a dollar sign in front of it, however you pronounce that.
Well, of course, he's a narcissist. Of course, he'd name it after himself. So it's called the Trump coin. So people have paid $55,000. Others have paid $4.3 million. And one Chinese gentleman paid $19 million. By the way, this is the guy who paid $6.7 million for a banana in an art auction. So
he's known for his purchases.
Yeah, he's a very wise purchaser. But the point is, they're all going to a very lavish meal with Trump in the next couple of weeks, and then afterwards being brought into the White House for a VIP tour. So this man is mixing, raising money for him and his family by using and prostituting his public office. And that's effectively he's done. And there's actually a thing called the Washington Executive Branch. And they're having a meal where you have to pay $500,000 just to sit with Trump's administration. You should be able to walk in and meet your own public representatives without having to pay $500,000.
It does seem quite bizarre that this, I suppose, entanglement of office and family and personal wealth is so intertwined, Louisa, does it not?
It's incredible. I mean, yeah. I think it's fair to say that most, certainly in the US, let's keep it there, most US politicians at this level have probably been financially successful as well as being politically successful. So there must be some correlation. But Trump is doing it to such an extent that it's hard to keep up with the number of different ways in which he himself and his family and his close, I'm not sure if he has friends, but people in his inner circle are profiteering from decisions that he is making in the White House. You know, he's going out and he's saying it to everybody. Today's a good day to buy shares. Today's a bad day to sell shares and so on and so forth. His son is the person who's in charge of the executive branch, and the cost of joining it will be up to $500,000. And the idea behind that is literally access to Trump and to his family. And it's coming up over and over again. Again, the article talks to this amazing plane that's been donated, a plane which, by all reckoning, he won't actually be able to use as an Air Force One plane because it will take too much time and money to retrofit it. But it will go into his personal library for his personal use post his presidency. And apparently this is all completely above board. The one thing I would say in relation to Trump, I suppose, on his side with this, is he is being very transparent about how much he is benefiting from being the president. It's eye-watering, the amount of money. Some estimations are that his family have made about $1 billion a month since he has become president, that their wealth has increased by that significant amount. He is sharing what he's doing. He's telling us what he's doing, so he's not hiding it. And yet the American people seem to be overlooking it, with the Attorney General saying that the gift in relation to the airplane was legally permissible, and his press secretary saying that he is doing everything he can for the American people.
Okay.
Sad, but, and by the way, he's now got another derogative nickname as a result of his dealings with Qatar. They're now calling him the Emir of America. And bearing in mind, he called the man in the president of Qatar a funder of terrorism only 5 years ago, and now he's sitting having tea with him and accepting a gift of a plane from him.
Amazing. Bob, let's move to matters more local. Again, not a mile from here, Dublin Liberty's distillery set to close temporarily. And again, an interesting piece of analysis in the business section of the Irish Times around the Irish whiskey industry, which is really hitting hard times.
Okay, well, this is a subject that is close to my heart. In my house, whiskey is considered grocery, so I know a lot about the whiskey business. I've been drinking it for 40 years. So we've had a 10-year boom, actually closer to 15, where whiskey has gone global. And it has moved from being an old codger's drink for people like me to women as the fastest growing market and younger drinkers. So we went from a situation when the legendary John Teeling opened his distillery, and it was the first new distillery in either Dublin or Ireland in 125 years when he opened it. He was really ahead of his time. We now have 50 distilleries, and let's be honest, nobody's shocked that some of them are not going to survive, especially the micro ones. And the basic story is here that the Dublin's Liberty distillery is, its visitor centre has closed, and the distillery itself temporarily initially, but they could be the first victim of this this boom. There has to be some casualties. We wish them well in reopening again, but it is a wonderful positive story in general.
I thought it was interesting in the Cantillon piece that IBEX, Irish Whiskey Association, couldn't give an exact number of how many distilleries there were in the country this week.
Yeah.
We did see, as Bob said there, you know, at the end of the 90s, we had 3 distilleries. Then we've over 50. So a lot of people poured into this business very quickly. There is that 5 years minimum, I think, that you have to wait.
By law.
Yeah,
it's a 3-year minimum.
Yeah, but I think to have any decent type of product, you're probably talking longer than that.
Look, I think when it comes to a product like whiskey, if you have a pot of money and you can leave it sit there for probably 10 years plus, realistically, and you don't need to touch it, then it can be a really good investment. But if you are looking at your cash flow, if you're cash poor, if you need to be able to access funds for any reason, then whiskey is a very volatile market to get into.
Also, the marketing of it is very, very complex and hugely competitive.
It is.
Particularly if you're on the international markets.
Yeah. But even in Wicklow, we were saying earlier, there's I can think of 3 sort of distilleries, micro distilleries within Wicklow. There's, you know, the Drumshambo Gin.
The one in Enniskerry.
There's Enniskerry, there's Paris Court, Tinahely. Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people don't know, but you can technically distill vodka on Monday and have it on the shelf in Tesco on Tuesday. It's an instant spirit, where whiskey, as you say, by law, it has to be 3 years old, and most of them are 5 plus. So there's a big long-term investment in your product. And of course, we've all heard of Angel's Breath, which is the evaporation through the wooden casks.
Yeah.
They lose about 8% a year to the atmosphere. So it is a more expensive business, but let's not move away from the fact it's been a boom for the Irish economy, the whiskey industry. And long may it last, and I hope this particular company pulls out of their,
absolutely,
their troubles.
More good news on the retail front for the Irish arm of Lego, growing revenue by 16% after opening a second Dublin store, Louisa.
Yeah, look, I think it really is great, and Lego is one of those timeless, you know, experience. I was going to say toys. I'm not sure it is a toy, but experiences, children, adults all like it, and it can last and be passed down through the generations. There's 2 shops now. The first one was opened in Grafton Street. The second one opened in Blanchardstown Shopping Centre in October 23. And what we're seeing is sort of a steady increase in turnover and a steady increase in profit. So in 2024, it went up. The amount that they earned went up to 9.4 million from 8 million the previous year. So there's a nice, healthy increase. Gross profit was up 36%. And the profit after tax, again, they're not huge numbers, but there was a profit after tax of just over 100,000 for the year, compared to a profit of 3,962 euros.
Small numbers, really, on 10 million almost of turnover.
There's also a really interesting element to this, where they're talking about the importance of the plastic that they use and trying to ensure that the plastic that they use is renewable, recyclable, that it is as environmentally friendly as possible. And an investment in what they call the greener raw materials, and looking at the mass balance sources, were up from 18% from the year before. And that increased their cost from 40, 50, 60%, but they do not pass that increased cost onto the consumer. They absorb that in terms of the operational efficiencies within the business.
It just shows, you say, about a business needing to change. You know, all businesses need to change ultimately. They're looking at their production costs.
Exactly.
That they need to be more environmentally friendly at a significant cost to the business.
Interestingly, they describe it, the group describe it. And of course, they're a Danish company. They describe Ireland as a new market. And I think by that they mean the shops. Because let's be honest, anybody over 40 in Ireland look back to our childhood. And the pillars of our childhood was Lego and Meccano. And every Irish parent remembers walking into the playroom the next morning and standing on one of those Lego bricks in your bare feet at 8 o'clock on a Saturday
morning. Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. And my God, I can still feel the pain. Let's move on to an aviation business story. Dublin-based CityJet, Bob, a loss of 16.8 million for 2023. And this is a business that has sought protection from its creditors on a number of occasions. It seems to be in a challenge situation right now, again, for the third time.
Look, in any other industry, when you look at a company that's been in examinership for a third time, you'd have to question it. But unfortunately, aviation is just one of those industries ever since 9/11 that it just every couple of years gets hit with a body blow, whether it's volcanic ash or terrorism or the 737 MAX scandal. So this company, we all remember CityJet, they used to fly into Dublin to London City Airport. But actually, since 2018, they haven't flown under their own banner. They do what's known as wet leasing. I think they've just painted all their planes white and they lease them out to other airlines who have capacity shortages. So basically, they're just renting out their crews and their planes. The problem is that their turnover's dropped from 131 million to 129, but their expenses has gone from 80 million to 97, and thus the loss. So look, it's a roller coaster of an industry. It's a fascinating industry. It's an exciting industry.
Yeah.
My God, there's no stability.
Yeah, I know. And the numbers are massive as well, as you say. Around the costs, like the turnover and the costs there, that's kind of an eye-watering number when you look at it that way. The actual level of cost is so high to the level of turnover. Okay, this next piece I want to talk to you about is by Mark O'Connell in today's Irish Times, and it's around an incident that happened last Monday. I didn't know about this story because I was away during the week and I wasn't listening to any news, but it says, I have an appetite for irony, but this is even too rich, even for me, says O'Connell. Bob, this basically is about a building that collapsed on Canal Road, which was a derelict building and turned out was owned by the Construction of Ireland Industry, CIF, Construction Industry Federation. And you just say, man, I don't know, could you make this up? I had to read this twice. As I say, I wasn't around when the story broke during the week. But then it goes on, there's another piece, then an editorial in the Irish Times, which talks about the non-collection of this tax that was brought in on derelict building. So it's a disgrace on a number of fronts.
Listen, first of all, it has to be said nobody was injured. There were people walking quite closely to it when it fell. It's a row of Victorian cottages near the barge pub along the canal, a beautiful part of the city. And basically, it just collapsed onto the street. And you're right, it was owned by the Construction Industry Federation, which is embarrassing in its own account. And I had to check this two or three times. The double embarrassment is apparently there was advertising on it for their safety campaign on a building that collapsed. So, look, it is embarrassing all round, but I think you're right. The bigger picture here is the fact that it highlights the amount of derelict buildings we have around the city and around the country.
Well, I think On Post put out a figure of 14,500 homes and commercial units vacant for over 4 years, and that's data collected by them. So 14,500 either houses or business premises that are empty.
In Dublin.
In the middle of a housing crisis. Yeah. And this is the thing. If you drive across Ireland diagonally, i.e. avoid all the major thoroughfares, you will go through villages and towns with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of empty houses. Now, okay, not every house or commercial premises is in a place where somebody wants to live, but we are in a housing crisis. So the Dublin City Council's derelict site register, which, by the way, this property was on since 2023, and fines, you know, these levies of €140,000 for these particular cottages, which apparently hasn't been paid yet. So even the authorities, at this stage, they reckon there's 20.5 million in levies for these derelict buildings that the local authorities haven't collected.
So more shame on them, in a sense.
I mean,
but these haven't been collected.
Have the laws to
collect. Yeah, no, it is a disgrace.
It really is poor in the middle of a housing crisis.
Louisa, the birds are back in Merrion Street. Miriam Lord, who I always enjoy her writing, has a kind of a witty anecdote about seagulls in Leinster House taking over the place. Tell us more.
So it seems that the maintenance department have sent out quite a witty email this week to occupants.
I'm not sure it was intended to be witty, but
it is. They were successful, you know, give credit where credit's due. But they're basically saying, you know, we've got good weather, it's fantastic, close the windows, because if we don't close the windows, we're going to get inundated with a lot of seagulls. They end by saying, your cooperation is much appreciated, as we have had a few seagulls visiting. What I think is equally interesting is that this sounds like a bit of a wildlife reserve. They have rats, mice inside and out, slugs in the basement, blue bottle infestations, pigeons, black ants, randy moths, foxes, and dive bombing seagulls. So if you want to bring your kids out to experience nature in the wild in Leinster House,
don't go to the zoo, go to Leinster House.
But a bird fancier tells us if they don't close those windows, they'll come in on Monday morning and it'll be like Dumbo the elephant was flying around the place all weekend.
All right. And then finally, if they really wanted it to be on trend, they should have ordered it with a generous helping of Teff or Fonio. What will be on your dinner plate in 2015, 2050 even? You could only find it in the Daily Mail, Bob.
Well, you know what? The whiskey story was right up my street. This is completely out of my comfort zone. I have no idea what this means. The gist of it is that with global climate change happening,
we'll be growing avocados in Kildare.
We're going to have to change what we're going to eat. And what they're arguing is that there's going to be new super grains, which we'll come to in a moment. Avocados, I've heard of those. Mushroom meatballs, yeah, move on. Sorrel salads, whatever they are. Cactus tacos, that sounds gorgeous, and barama beans. So I don't know what any of this means. So nutrient-rich grains, including teff and fonio, are set to replace the current trend, and it shows you how uncurrent I am, of quinoa and farro, whatever they are. So, I mean, look, you're talking to a man who thought taupe was a soup. Apparently it's a colour. So I have no idea what they're talking about.
Last word to you, Louisa.
I'm kind of with Bob on this. I think that the bringing along the new foods will be great. I think the underlying interesting aspect to this is that we are going to have to change what we're eating based on the climate realities. And when we look at farming and we look at food production, we need to say, not what do we, you know, what are we used to, but what can we sustainably grow in changeable weather? I'm far more interested in the tropical fruits, mango and papaya becoming staples of the Mediterranean diet, which means that, you know, we're quite close, so we'll have a lot more mango. I'm okay with that. Some of these grains seem a little weird.
Okay. On that note, we'll leave it. Thanks to my guests, Louisa Meehan and Bob Hoffman. Enjoy your weekend.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.